Hey, Morty, Morty, hey, listen up, Morty.
Oh, gee, Rick, what is it now?
I got something you gotta listen to, Morty. It's real important. It's called the Trisexuals Podcast.
Oh, I don't know, Rick. That kind of sounds like it's for adults, maybe?
Stop being such a freaking pussy, Morty, and listen to the damn podcast.
Oh, God, okay, here I go.
It's good stuff there, Morty. Just let that sink into your little adolescent mind.
Oh, God, Rick, they're talking about putting, you know, eggs up there, you know what?
Oh, that reminds me, Morty. I'm going to need you to put this gelatin egg up your ass, Morty. Go ahead and put it way up there. I mean, I just need that egg way up there.
Welcome to the Trisexuals, a podcast about spreading your legs and opening your mind. Please be advised that you must be over 18 years of age to ride. Remember that the Trisexuals cover adult themes and concepts and oftentimes use salty language.
The fucking fucktards from fucking hell.
For your safety and the safety of others, please keep your hands in your pants at all times. Enjoy the ride.
Have a sex toy, we'll try it. Have a fetish, we'll try it. We masturbate and copulate to recreate and educate. We are the Trisexuals.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Trisexuals. I'm Max.
And I'm Lily.
And I'm Kit.
And welcome to our podcast called How Many Different Ways We Can Corrupt Kit with Different Subcategories. Because this podcast, we're going to be touching upon the subject of the furry fandom. So more on that later, but I just wanted to give everyone the heads up in case you're a furophobic. You can take your medication now and continue to listen to us in a bit. One other special thing about this podcast is we are all actually physically in the same location right now.
Whoop, yay! Whoop!
Kit has decided to grace us with her presence and actually join us on our couch. So, yeah, we're all here in person. This is really great.
We're actually not naked this time.
Well...
Yet. Give us time.
I'm mostly naked.
That is actually an accurate statement.
And we have to turn the AC off to get good sound, and I suspect that the clothes will be coming off as we continue the podcast. So I'll be trying to generate as much heat as I possibly can. All right, so let's go to the update section. I've heard that just so you know, we were recording this out of sequence. So this might come after our final Pet Play episode airs. So now we're going to go to the section where we talk about all the reviews that Curious Kit has released while Lily and I have done absolutely nothing.
Oh, whatever, you guys.
I'm so ashamed.
Sit around and collect on the fame from being involved in a podcast with the very famous Curious Kit. So anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the reviews you've been working on?
We just know the truth. You're too busy having sex on this couch all the time.
That's true.
Yeah, we do like having sex a lot. Anyway, tell us about your reviews.
On to the reviews. So I've released a couple of reviews. First one I've got here is actually the Slick. It's the large size Slick by Tandis. And it's a great little toy for people who want something that's dual density texture but may not like realistic toys. So dual density is just... It's got like a really firm core and that nice squishiness on the outside. And you, most of the time, you do not find, toys that are not realistic in that way. So it's kind of a neat one. I review, so you can go onto my website and there'll be a link, in the show notes here where you can take a look at that. And I also did a review for the, Lifelike Lover. Say that 5 times fast by, Love Honey. And it's a realistic toy, and it's really nice because it's all good platinum silicone, but it's like under $30. So it's pretty hard to beat that. And again, if you want the full scoop, you can go to the show notes and take a look at that. So
Love Honey is always a good kind of gateway drug. They have some pretty reasonably priced stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you for the most part, you're going to find some pretty good quality stuff there.
Yeah, and that's a really good thing to make a point that not all sex toys have to be in the hundreds of dollars.
Exactly.
They can be in, you know, the $30, $40 range and still be a good quality sex toy.
Yeah, and this is a nice size too. Like if this is for a first sex toy or something like that, because it's a really small, non-intimidating toy, and it's actually really good for like butt play and stuff too for the size. So it's got a lot of good uses. So
The Trisexuals talk to you about butt play. Bend on over. All right, so now the section that I like to call What's Playing, or, you know, show and tell, depending on how we want to call that. But this is where we talk about what we've been interested in lately and been using. So I have been lucky enough to come in possession of a very rare beast's horn, and that would be a unicorn horn from Split Peaches. This is actually a gift from my dear friend Kit, so thank you very much, Kit.
You're very welcome. Yeah, I've had a unicorn horn for a while and really enjoyed it, and I ended up getting a couple in different colors. Mine's actually really cool. It glows in the dark, which is one of my favorite things ever. But so you got the one that's not quite so cool. Sorry, but I don't know. Best one for myself.
My butt doesn't really have eyes, so it doesn't matter what color it is. But yeah, it's actually
and
really
apparently
nice.
My vagina does.
So yeah, that's what I've been using. So Lily, what have you been up to?
Well, besides my favorite vibrator that I talked about, I think in the last podcast about the rechargeable magic wand, the purple one, I still love it. I've actually been into a lot more sensual play this week, and so Max has been using claw tips. So they're basically, how would you describe them, Max? What's the best technical way to describe them?
I mean, they're like non-sharp knife blades to a point that you can attach to the tips of your fingers. You know, they're kind of, they're dull edge, but they can still put a little bit of point pressure there. Mm-hmm. They're metal claw tips that
pretty
you put
much.
On your fingers.
And so I like scratching a lot, and I've just been into a really big into sensual play this week. So that was what I've been working on.
Well, and for me, like, one of the best things about coming to hang out with the Chameleons is I got to raid their sex toy box and try some of their stuff, which is pretty awesome. And I tried out the Stronic Bi, which was really cool toy, because it's unique that it's not really a vibrator. It thrusts. It's got magnets inside, and it's got, like, all of these different little speeds and patterns and things. It's just a really really unique experience, and I really liked it. Like, I now want one of my own really bad. So
hint,
I'm gonna steal it.
Buy her Astronic.
I'm gonna steal it and take it with me. So
I don't think so.
I'll fight you for it.
So Kit, you mentioned that, you know, you're happy to be visiting us because you get to dive into our very large collection of sex toys. It's just kind of funny because every day that Lily and I will come home from work and you've been staying here during the day, we just find you buried under this pile. E.T. style, like, oh, is she there? Oh, okay. I don't know.
All right.
Is this like that whole, like, you know, buried under a pile of tribbles?
Oh, so speaking of very cute fuzzy things that like to bury you in giant fur piles, the topic for this week is furry. So as it turns out, we are located in Denver, Colorado, and every year there is a furry convention that takes place here called the Rocky Mountain Fur Con. And that is actually the reason why Kit has decided to join us and grace us with her presence. So since Lily and I have had some experience in the furry fandom, and this is Kit's introduction to the whole furry thing,
yes,
I'd like to take some time now and kind of talk about your experience and what you went through, you know, going to this convention, Rocky Mountain Fur Con, for the first time, having only just heard about furry pretty much just months ago.
A couple of months ago, yeah.
We popped her fur cherry.
Fur cherry sounds pretty nasty. I do not want to eat a furry cherry.
Nice.
A first cherry, yes. All right, never mind.
Anyway.
So this all started when...
I had never heard of furry, actually, before I met Max and Lily. And, of course, me being curious, I'm like, oh, what's furry? What's this all about? And they started talking about it, and I was like, I might have some furry traits here. Potentially, I thought, ooh, this is good. I want to explore it. I want to see kind of what's going on with it. And so
Now, you kind of came to the furry fandom in a way that perhaps is unique, because you knew about the existence of fantasy-style sex toys before you knew about the furry fandom. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. After I had started blogging, maybe only a few weeks, I, you know, started following a lot of people and talking with some other bloggers and stuff. And I actually got recommended to go take a look at Tails and Portholes toys, which are fantastic. They're mermaid themed. And I was just like, oh my God, they make these kinds of toys. Like, I was so excited. It was just really, really awesome. So that got me into fantasy sex toys. But yeah, I had not heard of furry even. So.
For those sex toys fans out there that don't realize, most of the fantasy sex toy companies out there have furry roots. They kind of started on that side of things. So you're talking about like Bad Dragon and Frisky Beast, Tails and Portholes and Primal Hardware. You know, some people might not realize that that was actually kind of where fantasy toys kind of got their start. So now I have a deep history in furry, and we're going to touch upon that a little bit later. But when I was talking to Kit, it was one of the things that I was talking to her about, and about how my journey of autism had led me to furry. And one of the things that I explained to her is that one of the autistic traits that I have is I tend to see people with particular traits, and I kind of assign them an animal, people that I deal with on a daily basis, like somebody who's loyal and kind, perhaps they're a dog, or somebody who's maybe a bit intense, a badger or something like that, right? It's just one of the ways that my brain kind of helps sort personalities and knows how to deal with them.
After hearing about like your autism and how you would assign an animal to different people, I was really curious. I was like, so what kind of animal do you see me as?
And I didn't know her for too long at that point, but for some reason I couldn't quite put my finger on it. She just really struck me as a gazelle. And it turns out that I may have been even more accurate than I could have realized at the time, because...
Yeah, well, I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, gazelles are vegetarians. Well, there's, you know, I'm vegan, so there's the first one. I'm like, well, that kind of fits. And then...
You live in a very hot climate.
I do live in a very hot climate. That's true.
But yeah, so there's just a lot of things that seem to kind of overlap with that. So, that kind of, I think, started growing your interest in the whole thing. I mean, mm-hmm. You didn't really know what it was about at that point. But, you know, over the couple of weeks we've been talking, starting this podcast, you know, talking about furry and possibly doing it as a subject here, then it, you know, turned out that Rocky Mountain FurCon was coming here to Denver, and we're like, hey, this is a great opportunity for you to come see it firsthand, get a real understanding of what it is. Because I think one of the things that surprised you, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that I explained that when you go to a furry convention, it's actually not all that sexual. It's actually a really family-friendly sort of event. So, you know, even though that's the case, you oftentimes there's fantasy sex toy companies that will set up a booth there, but they're, you know, protected, they're age protected, so that you have to be an adult to go in there and that sort of thing.
And they have a lot of yiff and stuff around, but a lot of it they've had to cover, and so they've made it really, really family friendly.
Yeah, absolutely. All ages can be found at a furry con, and there's not such thing as a fur pile like happening, at least not in the public areas. God knows what's going on behind private doors. But, you know, generally there's just people there that are a fan of expressing different parts of their personality and taking on kind of a headspace, even though they don't identify as BDSM or most of them, you know, haven't ever tried anything like that. In a way, you know, this animal role play is a form of headspace. So one of the ways I bribed her into coming out was I told her that I would print her some horns, little gazelle horns.
Oh, and I am so thrilled, because before I even started blogging or anything like that, or before I had any inkling of furry, I had seen Maleficent and I saw the horns and I was like, those are the coolest ever. I wish I could go like wear Maleficent's horns just for a while. And it ended up like the pattern that he used is actually based on like kind of a Maleficent shape, and so they're awesome. They're gorgeous, and I've put some tweets out on my Twitter. You can see a picture of them, and They were really fun to wear. They're huge, too. I love them.
This just in, Curious Kit likes horns. She's very horny.
True.
We knew that that joke would have to come up at some point during this. So, you know, we convinced her to come out here. We bribed her, if you will, with horns. We prepared her a little bit for some of the things that you would see. But I think right now would be really great, Gazelle Kit, as most people know you. You know, what it was like when we stepped out of that car and we entered the hotel.
Not even that. When you first saw, we were actually driving into the parking lot and you saw a bunch of fursuiters.
I did see some fursuiters, yeah. And that was kind of fun. Like, they weren't in their full costumes. A lot of them were, like, carrying their heads.
Somebody
and
had
stuff.
Left
yeah.
the gate open and some of the fursuiters had escaped into it.
But it was interesting walking in, like, fursuiters really are in the minority. There were a lot of people there. Like, some people had on tails or ears or paws or something, but a lot of people were just kind of dressed like normal. And at first, I guess it's a little bit of a shock to see, like, all of these, you know, living animals running around. And but after you take a second and just, like, it's really fun because a lot of them are, they're so funny when they walk. They're, like, just so darn cute.
Oh, yeah.
And they're giving hugs out, and it's just really it's a cute thing.
If you've never hugged a fursuiter, think of when you were a kid and you had that really fuzzy plushie.
Mm-hmm.
But now as an adult, when you're tall, you get to basically hug a very tall, fuzzy plushie all over again.
For many people, including me when I was younger and now, you know, I consider a lot of people at furry cons to be my family. They're not just friends. They're people that I see when I go to conventions or local events. And they care about stuff going on in my life. They ask questions. I'm interested in what's going on in their lives. And they give hugs. They make you feel better when you're down. They celebrate things with you when good things are going on in your life. And it's just a really heartwarming sort of experience to have.
And that's mostly what I noticed. There was a lot of, like, social stuff going on. There were a lot of games. I mean, there were dance competitions. There were these great little obstacle courses, like, just things where people could go and kind of bond and hang out and do different activities. And of course, there were vendors. That was a really big part of the thing with every furry themed thing you can imagine and a lot of things you probably can't imagine that were just really, really awesome. So it was just kind of a fun place to wander around and see all of the different stuff there. And
there's only one thing that furries like more than dressing up like their favorite animal, and that's spending a massive amount of money.
That is true. I did not know how expensive fursuits were, but they're in the thousands.
Absolutely. For the good ones.
For
the good ones. You can make your own, and some people are good at that, some people not so good. But, you know, and that's another thing I'd like to note right now, is you saw all levels of fursuit stuff. You saw stuff that was professional, like movie-grade costuming stuff, and you saw people that had obviously kind of like hobbled together, you know, what they had and didn't really know sewing too well. The head's a little bit bulky and crazy. But you know what? It didn't matter. Everyone accepted you know, there's no, like, judgments on that sort of thing.
Plus, there's something for everyone because, like, I got some great little paws. Actually, they were $15, and they're going to be on my Twitter account. You can take a look at them. They're
link
black.
In the show notes.
Little pink. Yeah, or in the show notes. And they are just, they're adorable, and they're so soft. Like, the minute I touched them, I thought, I got to have them because they're just so soft.
I know. I really wanted a pair myself, but that's okay because they only had one black pair.
I know. We were like.
And it's just as well because something that we'll talk about later on was able to happen due to this.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that we just mentioned that there's not a lot of sexual stuff actually happening at these conventions, at least not in the public area, because we're the trisexuals, we're going to do our darndest to turn into sexual as we can. So these awesome gloves that Kit has obtained, I'm sure, are going to be used for some soft sense play.
Yeah, this is going to be my new favorite sense play.
And it's not necessarily going to be animal role play or anything like that.
No,
it's
just
they're so
soft.
Yeah.
They are amazingly soft. I know, I can't put them down. I've got them right now here. I'm like playing with them because I just can't put them down. I had them on the whole con. I couldn't put them down. So yeah, they're really nice.
Yeah, Kit really did get into the furry spirit. And of course, I insisted that one of the things that needs to happen since it is her first furry con is that she commission a badge.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
one of, it's kind of so a rite beautiful. Of passage to furry. when you go to your first convention, you really want to get a badge drawn of your character. And, you know, some people have multiple characters, but it doesn't matter. You go there, you get one drawn, you know, things, depending on the quality of the artwork, you're paying somewhere between $10 to $60, you know, and there's varying ranges of quality. So,
And it was really kind of different than I expected to get one of these done, too, because I wasn't sure. I was like, do I need to sit and have them draw me or have that? And it actually is a really simple process. She just goes, she asks a few questions. I'm like, yeah, I want a gazelle. She's like, do you want any special colors? And I thought, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, so I just started with gazelle colors.
We did a poor job of preparing her for the fact that furries like to have lots of tiny, crazy details on their characters.
So we kind of gave her a general idea. And then when I came back to get it, it was amazing because it's like she was intuitive and knew what I wanted because there's sparkles like in the eyes and in the hair. And the hair is like same color as mine and curly, which mine's really curly. And it's just, it's so beautiful.
We'll have a link in the show notes. And any good furry artist, which just as a note here, furry artists, you guys are really amazing artists. And, you know, the regular world gives, they just don't value the stuff that you do. But, I mean, the ability to take people's imaginations and fantasies and turn them into these snapshots of what people are seeing in their heads, I think is really incredible skill. And the work that you do is just incredibly undervalued. That's my opinion.
And that was one of my favorite things about the con, too, was wandering around and seeing all of the different furry art. I mean, I saw some incredible things of all different shapes and sizes. Yeah. And they had an auction, which you guys need to tell them about what you got at the auction because it's beautiful.
And there was this one print that I still wish I'd gone back and bought. It was the one that had the horse, but it was done in like the outlines were tree branches.
Right.
And it was so gorgeous.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
But yeah, for the auction, what we ended up doing is Max and I went and bid on a piece of furry art that was just beautiful. It was had a Japanese, cherry blossom with a tigress playing...
That was a wolf.
Oh, it was a wolf? A wolf. Oh, thank you. A wolf playing a flute underneath it. And how this is so amazing to me is I love playing my flute, and I could just imagine me sitting underneath a tree like that, having it, you know, drop its cherry blossoms and playing. It was just so perfect. And we ended up winning it. So I have it here.
Yeah, and it's a charity auction, too. That's one of the things about these conventions that many people don't realize is that a lot of the money that gets earned at these things end up going to some sort of animal-related charity. In this particular case, it was going towards dogs that are being rehabilitated to be service animals. And you just look at the donation jars there, and even though people have paid their hard-earned cash to get there, because these jars are just full to the brim with cash that people have donated to these charities.
And so the actual charity was Freedom Service Dogs. And RMFC, or Rocky Mountain Fur Con, actually released it and said they have raised $3,588 towards the Freedom Service Dogs. So I think that's such a great accomplishment for a three-day fur con. I mean, that's huge.
And this actually is one of the, I mean, it's not the smallest, I should say, but it's not one of the larger cons out there. There's cons out there that are ranging, you know, 6,000, 7,000 people, and they can raise quite a pretty penny. The money from this auction also, you know, these are pieces that artists donate to the charity auction and people bid on, and then that money goes to whatever charity. So,
and you just reminded me when you were talking about dogs too, like it was a really dog friendly space. Like I petted more dogs there than ever. But
to be clear, she's talking about actual bio dogs and not just people dogs. Dressed up but as dogs. There were plenty of those too.
One of the cutest things I saw, Tails and Portholes, actually, their dog actually has its own Twitter. It's pretty funny. But
Biker Dog Judge, check it out.
Yeah. Judge, really cute. We're gonna probably have that in the show notes, but she'd gotten wings for Judge, like these bat wings. So it was a bat terrier, and it was just adorable. Yeah, I had to get a picture.
That was awesome. But also the great thing that they have for Judge is like everyone there has their badges with their furry character on it. So they're humans going around with the little, you know, furry animal on it. Like, this is my character. Now Judge, being a real animal, has a persona badge, which actually had him as a human with his little dog collar on. Really cute idea. Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. You know, everyone just goes here, they do just fun things, fun creative things, mm-hmm. and that's really where my interest is in there. So the badges we purchased, these paws we purchased, they weren't even close to the largest purchase that was made at this FurCon by the Trisexuals.
Let me tell you, there's
a transaction that blew out 3 credit cards before it was done.
I know they want to protect us with fraud, but come on!
This episode not brought to you by Chase. So, Lily, well, why don't we start a little bit with Lily's history into furry? So, I'm apparently well known at introducing people into furry, and I've been dating Lily for over 10 years. And early on in our relationship, I'd introduced her to the idea that I was furry, and I had a character at the time named Max Skunk, who was a green skunk. I had a fursuit and everything, who would ride a unicycle around. Now, when I started dating Lily, I stopped going to fur cons just because I didn't have a lot of time. I spent a lot of time with her, and eventually kind of, you know, parted ways with a lot of my furry friends, not on any sort of official basis, just stopped talking and that sort of thing. So I didn't take her to one furry convention, but I don't really think it interested you back at the time.
Back at the time, I don't think I was receptive to it.
So yeah, and I actually did take her to one convention a long time ago, MFF.
And at the time, it really didn't interest me. I wasn't into it all. I found it kind of strange and weird, and I don't know, I just was not into it at all. And so I actually, in a way, pushed Max away from the furries.
Yeah, I mean, not directly, but just more so in, like, lack of being interested in it and that sort of thing. I was like, oh, well, I mean, I guess I'm not going to furry cons or anything anymore. Eventually, you know, we were moving out of a house and ended up actually getting rid of my fursuit. It was in rough shape, to be fair. But, you know, recently with getting back involved in the things that we're into, BDSM and the Trisexuals and the
Pony Sex Boys and all that stuff,
we've kind of found ourselves getting back into it. And in fact, Lily's had kind of a huge change of heart on the furry thing.
I find it so much fun and so cute. And I love getting hugs by the fursuiters and everything. And, you know, it just, this time when we went, it just, something really clicked. I don't know what it was, but it was like I was a child again. Mm-hmm. Like, seeing these fursuiters and seeing, like, the happiness, the joy, mm-hmm. the childlike, oh God, what's essence, I guess is mm-hmm. the way to explain it. I just fell in love. And then, well, didn't really plan on it, but we ended up, I tried on a fursuit head and paws.
From Lemon Brat Studio. Is it Lemon Brat Studios? No, it's just Lemon Brat. And they make custom hoodies and fursuits and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we'll have it in the show notes. But what's really nice about Lemon Brat is, instead of, you know, having to commission and, you know, have a fursuit where you have to pay money and you wait months to get it.
Sometimes years.
They actually had a bunch of pre-made stuff right there. So you could walk away after a transaction of having a really nice fursuit head, tail, the arm coverings, and
for a partial suit. They did have a full suit there too for sale.
Yep.
But the idea is, instead of having to wait for all that stuff, you can, you know, purchase these. They're a lot cheaper than getting a custom-made fursuit. Quicker, obviously. And you can get a feel for what it's like to fursuit without putting in that huge investment into it. So Lily kind of fell in love with this little cat that they had. I think it was called Pretty Kitty or something like that. It was the name of the style.
And the minute she put it on, it looked like it was made for her. Like, it just came alive. It was the cutest thing ever. And my jaw hit the floor. I was like, she's like, should I maybe get it? And I'm like, you gotta get it. You just have to get it. It's so gorgeous. Yeah, it was.
After mulling it over for a while and Lily trying to gauge what my interest level was in her having a fursuit, oh, hell yeah.
And also, you know, making sure, you know, I wasn't going to break the bank, of course.
I mean, one thing that we had talked about when Lily started getting back into furries, she was like, you know, I am kind of interested in doing a fursuit. And technically the fursona that most interests her now is a deer fursona that she has. But, you know, what if she commissions this very expensive deer fursuit and didn't like it. So I thought that this would be a great opportunity for her to try it out, see what she likes about it, see what she doesn't like, see if she likes having a partial, see if she would like to try having a full fursuit. And that way, you know, we'll learn all that stuff. And if we do commission a fursuit in the future, we'll know what she wants done.
And I gotta tell you, I am so in love with this cat. We actually even came up with a new name for it when I'm in my furry persona. It is
Sugar Bell.
Sugar Bell.
Sugar Bell, the pretty kitty.
And we actually ended up getting a bell and a two different collars. One I can wear in a fursuit, and then one I could wear out of fursuit. Do you remember who it was from?
Yes, Legardo was one of the merchants there. He does amazing leather work.
Oh my goodness! And he punches the holes right there.
Yeah, I mean, this guy definitely knows what he's talking about with leather. And what I personally liked about it is, you know, here's someone who's clearly bringing some, like, good bondage merchandise to the furries. Like, here you go, fuzzy animals. Enjoy some bondage.
Exactly. And, you know, to talk about, like, being actually what it feels like to be in a fursuit. When you were a kid and you dressed up for Halloween and you got to be someone completely else for even just a few hours. Mm-hmm. Once you put on that mask, you can be whoever you want. Absolutely. If you want to be, you know, in my day job, I'm very, you know, I have to be on task, on point. But once I put that head on, that all went away. I was able to be my goofy, crazy self.
Absolutely. So why don't you tell us a little bit what it's like, you know, first trying on the fursuit, going through the process of deciding to buy it, and then eventually ending up, like, interacting at a furry convention mm-hmm. with other fursuiters. And how, because you've been to two conventions entirely without having a fursuit. Yeah. And this would be the first one that you fursuited at. So tell me how, like, you know, those are a little bit different. And how the experience differs.
So to answer your first couple questions about, you know, the process. So when I went there and I was like, well, I really, really want it. And so then I was like, well, maybe I don't need it. I can still just get, like, you know, the paws and maybe a pair of ears, you know, and be happy in a tail. And then we're like, okay, well, maybe I'll try on the head. And then it's like, okay, I really, really like this. I really like, you know, being able to be in it. But then I'm like, oh, well, do we really have the money for it right now? Should I get it? Am I going to wear it just maybe one time a year? Am I going to wear it multiple times a year? Because it is a big investment. I want to make sure I'm going to be able to wear it multiple times instead of just once and put it in a box until next year. So that came into play, as well as, you know, just the quality. I actually contacted a couple people, one being Tails and Portholes, to make sure that, you know, they were a good company. And Tails and Portholes said, yes, she knows people who's gotten stuff from these guys, Lemon Brats, and they love it. Everybody, like, is, like, in love with it. So one thing I would mention about fursuiting that you don't really realize until you see them, it is hot. It is so hot when you put it on. And you don't realize just how hot it is. They have these amazing, like, fan setups so you can actually...
They have a whole separate room at these conventions that is set aside. It's called the Headless Lounge, where fursuiters can go take their heads off, cool off, get some water, and put their heads on all these fans. There's a big fan set up there. And, you know,
I think they had a swamp cooler there, too. Oh, that was that big fan we saw.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, you know, it's really good because water is really important. You don't realize, but you sweat so much. What was your other question?
So my main question was, you know, you've attended conventions just as an ordinary human being, let's say. And now you got to experience it from the other side. Because I've always perceived fur cons as kind of having two separate castes. Right? There's mm-hmm. like the ordinaries, and then there's the people with fursuits. So how did your convention experience change?
Well, before, when I was just like in full human attire, I mean, I didn't feel as an outsider, but I didn't feel completely part.
Maybe you weren't experiencing like 100% of what the con had to offer. You were missing out on something.
I was missing out on something. And I think that was really big part of it is, you know, you got to see all these fursuiters playing and interacting with one another. But as a person, just like with any other, you know, like BDSM, you want to give them respect. You know, you want to, you know,
You're not going to go as a human and start,
you know, like trying to pet them or cuddle them or whatever. There's actually a protocol that, that happens with that. You actually, you know, ask permission and things like that. But once I started walking around in Sugar Bell, I realized just that was the piece I was missing, is you got to be 100% immersed into this section of people that totally accept you with open arms. Everyone's laughing and having a good time.
Walking down the hallway, getting hugged.
Everybody's doing this, the paw thing.
Waving their paws at each other. Now, Kate, you and I got to witness quite the transformation, because when Lily first put her costume on and was walking around the convention, she kind of was walking around like how she normally does as a human. But then, like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes into the experience, her hips start swaying a little bit more to wag the tail. Her head's bobbing back and forth, moving her hands. And then you just saw this character just come to life in front of us. And, you know, at first she was really shy about interacting with people in fursuits. And the next thing you know, she's chasing a ball of yarn and tossing a ball back and forth and hula hooping. So, and Lily also got a chance to play some of the furry Olympic games, which is something that without a fursuit, you kind of totally miss out on. But they're just little fun games like musical chairs and stuff like that, dodgeball.
Obstacle courses
yes. that people will do in fursuits. And it's great because these things block your vision. They make your they dull your senses for all these sorts of activities. So the end result is a bunch of people dressed as animals falling over and acting goofy, and it's just absolutely incredible. So what was it like participating in these events as one of the fursuiters?
It was actually a lot of fun, and I have a competitive nature just because.
Not that these things are very serious competitively, no. Considering all the cheating that goes on.
Oh, there is a ton of cheating.
But and the cheating is totally allowable.
Oh, it's actually encouraged. Because when you're in fursuit, you can only see through the little partial mouth that's open, as well as the eyes. And there's definitely some major blind spots. So try to imagine yourself playing dodgeball with your vision reduced probably, what, 50%?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the fursuit. Some of them have near zero visibility. Right. And I've even heard of fursuits that have to have cameras installed for you to see. And there's like a screen on the inside, you know, depending on the face shape and that sort of thing. But
So imagine that and trying to play dodgeball. And one thing that was really interesting for me is I am not a hula hooper. I try hula hooping outside of the fursuit, and I can't hula hoop worth, well, shit, basically. And I don't know, for some odd reason, when I have it on, you know, I have the tail, the head, everything, and I try and hula hoop, I went for, what, a minute or two? Yeah,
easily.
She was doing good. Hopefully we'll post a Vine of that so you can all see it.
It was amazing. I couldn't believe just how easy it was to hula hoop. It was really crazy. But yeah, there was such a great transformation with that. And I am really looking forward to going to the next con and being able to wear it and just.
Or the next furry event. Oh, and yeah. I can't wait to take you to fursuit bowling. That's one of the favorite activities that fursuiters have. You go to a bowling alley, you crash it, and there's just a bunch of furries. And now they can't fit their fingers into the holes in the bowling ball. So they have to hold it like children do with two hands and swing it between their legs and try to knock over the pins. It's really a lot of fun. And oftentimes, fursuiters will fall over, and you know that's always enjoyable too. Now I want to come back to you for a little bit, Kit, because you came to furry, you know, this being your first furry con and all that, kind of a unique way, because most people have experienced a lot of the misconceptions about furry before getting a chance to go to a furry convention. I'm talking now about things like the infamous CSI episode for furry and the way that we're portrayed in popular media. I say we, I'm one of us. Yo, furries. But the way that furry is portrayed in popular media isn't necessarily very positive. And you've managed to miss a lot of that for various reasons. So I actually introduced you, after you had attended the first day of your furry con, I introduced you to the CSI, the infamous CSI episode, where it takes place at a fake furry convention in Las Vegas. And I don't know, tell me a little bit about, like, that how they perceived the furry convention versus the reality of you seeing it.
Oh, it was so different because the CSI episode had furries kind of portrayed as a little bit creepy.
A little bit.
Oh, a lot creepy.
It's not a furry con I would have wanted to go to.
No, and I certainly would not bring my children to that one.
No.
Yeah, exactly. And the actual con was nothing like that. Like, there were, it's not like you walked in the room with all these, like, you know, smoke-filled room with these orgies of, like, scary looking, I don't know.
I've been going to the wrong cons because there's been no orgies at the cons exactly. I've been at.
it was a lot of, like, just people having fun and hanging out and vendors and things. Like, it's complete, like, it was shocking actually to me to see how furries perceive, because to me, like, it seems really strange because furries, like, oh, it's like a, you know, a living stuffed animal, it's like, or like, you know, your mascot at a
you're
game
like,
or
obviously
something.
There's a certain, like, amount of innocence to it.
Yeah, it's like it's cute and it's fun, but it's got like a really, I guess, kind of a sinister perception about it, which is so
well,
weird.
There's something the media likes to do is blow things out of proportion in a way that it was never intended to
they
be.
They like to sensationalize.
So you would say that the perception, the media perception of furries is very different and far off from what the reality,
from
right?
The con, and day.
I'm looking through the calendar here for Rocky Mountain Fur Con, and I'm looking at these various events, you know, meet the guests of honors, fursuit charades, you know, dance every night. And what I'm not seeing in here, maybe I'm just not seeing it, I don't see the fur pile with Yiff.
yeah, exactly.
With Yiffing furs. It's not on this schedule. It's not on any of the schedules for any of the fur cons, at least not the ones that I know about. Like I said, who knows what's going on behind closed doors? But perception is quite different.
And actually, the only sexual thing out of really... There was two things that were sexual throughout the entire con. One, there was a BDSM 101.
Yeah. It was pretty innocent, all things considered. I mean, that's a good information to have.
And obviously, you have to be 18 or older to even walk into that room.
Yeah.
And then the second... I guess there's three. The second one was adult charades, which, again, you had to be... 18 and older.
And we peeked on in that. Peeked in on that. It's not like there's anyone naked. There can't be nudity or anything that. It was just like, I guess there was adult themes in it. So,
and I think swearing too was part of it.
All things told, this is probably one of the cleaner conventions that I go to. It was cleaner than Comic-Con.
Yeah, and actually, there's a kind of a dress code for coming. Like, you can't, you know, expose too much skin or, like, you know, I remember seeing that on the sheet where we had to, like, sign up and stuff. Like, you can't just go in and have a lot of nudity and stuff. That's just not
It's so family friendly that you're going to get, you know, children all the way up to senior adults.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess what we're getting at here is keep your eyes open. Trisexuals are going to host a furry con that's all sexual, all adult. Because this is what we want to see. I'm just kidding. Honestly,
I don't know if I would want to even have sex in my fursuit because it's a lot of money.
That's true. So for some people, that, you know, that happens. But most, I would have to say, I mean, without any real data on this, most of the people there probably would not and do not want to have sex in their fursuit.
You make a good point, though, about the fursuits, because I didn't realize what lengths you'd have to kind of go to make sure you don't get them dirty, like, you know, really keep them, because they're kind of hard to clean, and I guess they're, like, have to be dry cleaned, or, you know.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't just throw this paw right into the laundry at all.
Yeah,
the
pig fur has special care. You have special brushes for taking care of it. There's sprays you put on to get rid of the bacteria. You can't have mold growing in these things, you know.
Yeah,
so
if you're going to try and have sex in a fursuit, like, that's going to be really difficult to keep it clean, I would think. But
get that club soda out. You got to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no kidding.
And look for Trisexuals Furry Sex Con coming soon. So I think that pretty much wraps up our discussion on furry as it is now. I don't believe that we received any questions in the way of furry before this episode, is that right?
Not yet, but there's still plenty of time. If you hear this episode and it raises some questions for you, all you really need to do, we have a hashtag on Twitter. It's hashtag Ask Trisexuals, and you can put your question in and we'll take a look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Answer as best we can.
Furry is a subject that's likely to come up quite a bit on this I almost said this convention, on this podcast. So yeah, we'd love to hear your questions. And go ahead and check out the tweet. There will be a link in the show notes of Lily's lovely new fursuit, Sugar Bell, holding up our sign with Ass Trisexuals. Isn't she darn cute, folks? I think so. So anyway, that being the case, now is the time of the podcast where we answer some listener questions. And we have two questions this week. I will read off the first one, if that's okay with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The first question we have is from at official Rebsy, Rebsy Reviews. And she wants to know, what were your very first sex toys?
Well, to be honest, I actually hadn't not gotten into sex toys until Max actually introduced them to me about 10 years ago. Prior to that, I'd have to say my very first sex toys was a hairbrush and a cucumber.
Yeah. I believe that probably for a lot of female-bodied individuals, that's going to be a very similar story.
Right. And then even after Max and I had started dating, our first toys together were, unfortunately, jelly toys that we didn't know anything.
We didn't know any better at that point.
Yeah.
You know? We've come a long way in 10 years. But we had this one toy, I remember, the first dildo we bought, and that sucker burned.
It burned
both of us. Yeah, that is not good. If your toy is burning,
oh, remember the vibrator too?
Yeah, well, see, my first sex toy actually was a gift from a furry friend of mine that I hadn't met in person, but I had talked to online a lot. Kind of like in online role play girlfriend that I had, and she sent me a vibrator in the mail. It was just this cheap, I think probably California Exotics hard plastic vibrator.
Was that the purple one?
It had to have been green because she knew that I liked green. But yeah, that was the first sex toy that I owned. If you want to talk about the first thing that I put in myself besides my hands, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what that may have been.
And for, I think the first sex toy you ever bought me was, I think it was the bullet vibe with the longer vibrator. It was like covered in like a pink
paint that started chipping off, which is always a good sign when paint chips off inside of you.
Yeah, it was. We didn't know any better back then.
Yeah, we've definitely come a long way.
And so have our, you know, all of the people that make these sex toys have come such a long way.
The market has certainly changed.
In health and everything.
So, what about you? What was your first
actually,
sex toy?
Kind of a similar experience. So, I got my first sex toys actually when I was in college. Prior to that, just like with Lily, my actual first sex toy would have actually been tampons, which don't have much girth. But it's like, it's what I thought of to get my hands on. But
Kit and the tampon.
I know. My mom was probably like, why are we going through so many tampons? Anyway, my first real sex toys, I had kind of an online boyfriend. I actually never met him in real life, but he bought me, along with a dozen roses, a nice big bundle of sex toys. I know. He was really good to me in that way.
Sounds like a keeper, and roses and sex toys. Well, I'm sold.
yeah. But anyway, so he'd got me this bundle of sex toys. He kind of let me go pick them out. And I'm sorry to say, I didn't know what I was doing. And I picked a lot of jelly toys. And I did get one that's like ABS plastic. And I actually still have it because it glows in the dark. I don't know. Maybe that's where my thing for glow in the dark toys started. But I noticed like 3 or 4 years later, I had this kind of almost like unicorn horn shaped plug, and it had kind of melded and squished into this ball of goo. Geez. It was really, really gross. And so, and several other of the toys had done that. Like I didn't, you know, I just kind of had them all in a drawer together, and it was just a big ugly jelly clump. And yeah, so that kind of spurred my interest in finding toys that are made of stuff that's not, you know, gross and toxic and that kind of stuff. So those are mine.
So Kit, you're not the only person who at a young age was getting off in some form due to tampons, because I actually did not have access to erotica when I was younger, obviously. And the only sort of representation of a woman's vulva that I could come across was the crude graphics that were in the instruction pamphlet for a tampon. And so I got a hold of that, and there was this great image. I remember it. in my mind of, you know, a woman spreading her lips and inserting a tampon. And I just thought this was absolutely the greatest thing that I'd ever seen in my life to that point.
Which, of course, brings us to the next question from Canadian Erotica or Canadian Kink. Do you
like Canadian Erotica?
Thank you. At Canadian Erotica. Do you like erotica? If so, what are your favorite types of stories? So you're telling me, Max, you like the picture ones better.
Oh, well, I like the picture ones. I feel like this is kind of multiple questions into one, because do you like erotica? I mean, that can mean visual erotica too, right?
I would think so.
So I do like erotic stories, but I don't have the patience for it 99% of the time. And so my go-to for erotica, period, is YIF pictures. I am the furriest in the bunch here, the trisexuals, and that's pretty much primarily what I look at. E621, I look up my favorite furry creature, and there you go. So yeah, I don't really have a favorite type of story. So
yeah, and actually, I don't really have a favorite type of story either. I'm a lot more visual in that respect too. Like, I like videos, and pictures too. And, you know, I've been looking at a little bit of YIF lately. It's kind of an interesting thing to explore.
I've got her hooked.
Yeah. It's got me hooked a little bit. Yeah. But I've read some stories and stuff, but it's actually Lily is really the connoisseur here of written erotica. She needs to tell you all about that.
So written erotica, I actually started at a younger age, probably when I started using like the hairbrush and the cucumber age. And that was back in when fan fiction was really a big part of my life. I would look up different types of anime back then and still now, Sailor Moon, Tuxedo Mask. Oh.
Let me just say, I'm very turned on by you being turned on by Sailor Moon. This works for me.
So I would actually read a lot of those stories. I guess they were called Lemons, I think. I can't remember. There was like this whole thing in fan fiction as far as the different levels.
Oh.
As far as, you know, if it's, you know, PG-13 all the way to R and, you know, angst and all that stuff. So that was part of it. And then when I got older, I started reading actual books. And one of them was, it was called A Blood Red Moon. I cannot remember the author, so I'll have in the show notes. But there was this one part of the book that it was two people. And the woman basically took control of the situation of the guy. And they started having sex on the staircase. And just reading that book, just reading that part of it, just, it was so amazing. I could like see it and picture it in my mind, know what it would feel like, you know, to have the rug burn on your butt.
So Lily is definitely, your primary method would have to be the written word as far as
right off. Because I love because I love reading. And for me, I can actually immerse myself and put myself into that character. To, you know, to know what it's going to feel like.
Which I find that so fascinating because I love to read too, but it's like all nonfiction. So that is so cool that that's become like such a big thing for you.
I think that explains why you're so into Corruption of Champions.
Yeah. That would explain because the written word really is big. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love porn. I love Erica Lust and Lust Cinemas. Yes. Love them.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
For video, Erica Lust is our favorite.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I love porn, I love all that, but what really gets me turned on is got to be written erotica. It's got to be. Cool. And especially if there's vampires and werewolves. Oh, yeah.
Team Jacob.
Team Edward.
What? That changed. Come on. You got to like the werewolf.
All right,
come on.
Team Jacob and Team Edward.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Now you're just going crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway. thank you very much, Official Rebsy and Canadian Erotica. Your questions are very awesome. And if you want to send the Trisexuals questions, we will answer anything, serious and goofy questions alike. Just send us a tweet at hashtag AskTrisexuals. All right. So I think that pretty much wraps up this episode of the Trisexuals. Thank you for listening. I'm Max Chameleon.
I'm Lily Chameleon.
And I'm Kit.
Remember to rate us on iTunes, tell your friends about us, and don't forget that the Plushies and Furries convention is coming soon in Las Vegas, and the password is EIEIO.
Hit the Gazellerator and... talk to the hoof, because the horns don't want to listen.
And of course, always remember to practice safe scritching and yiffing in the fur pile.
Okay, guys, that was a lot of fun.
Oh my god,
I'm so
yes.
glad we got to pick you.
Me too.
Just a pint full of lager helps the lesbians go down. The lesbians go down. The lesbians go down. Just a pint full of lager helps the lesbians go down in the most delightful way. You keep pissing off the cat with that shit.